मावदाता शतपत्रलोचना इशांगवस्त्रा सुरुचा सपेशसा सर्वे च दुर्बाहव उन्मिशन मणि प्रवेक निष्का परना सुवर्षसा The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features are very attractive. They are just the age of growing youths. They all have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka are all personalities with spiritual bodily features not to be found in the material world. We can find the descriptions in the revealed scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam. Impersonal descriptions of transcendence in the scriptures indicate that the bodily features in Vaikuntha Loka are never to be seen in any part of the universe. As there are different bodily features in different places of a particular planet, or as there are different bodily features between bodies in different planets, similarly the bodily features of the inhabitants in Vaikuntha Loka are completely different from those in the material universe. For example, the four hands are distinct from the two hands in this world. Lord Brahma, at the dawn of creation, is being given a beautiful vision by the mercy of Lord Krishna of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. In reciprocation of his great dedication to fulfill the instruction of the Lord in a spirit of devotion, this precedent the Lord established at the very beginning of this universe. The purpose of life is to obey the will of the Lord and to execute His order with devotion. We find at the very beginning of the creation of our universe, the Lord arranging a perfect example of how the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master is to be carried out, and what the result of such a proper relationship will be. Krishna, as Jagadguru, immediately put Brahma in a perplexed condition, not knowing who he was, where he was, what he was to do. And when Brahma ultimately became completely humble by his inability and helplessness, then Krishna spoke to him. He gave him an instruction to perform tapasya, in a spirit of devotion. Similarly, this material universe, it is a terribly perplexing situation. Krishna explains in Gita, it is like a banyan tree. Nobody knows where is the beginning, where is the end, where is the middle. And at the same time, we become so much entangled in the complexities of this material existence that we do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. It is the nature of the material energy to delude, confuse the mind of anyone, even if they are as great as Lord Brahma. And the more great scholars and scientists try to figure out what is this material energy, how it is working, why it is working, the more they become confused, the more they become bewildered. The greatest bewilderment is when you think you know something but you do not. It is the beginning of knowledge when you realize you're a fool, you don't know anything. Because then you can turn to an authority and say, please instruct me, I do not know. But when you think you know, you are really in the most difficult situation of ignorance. Because there's no hope of you inquiring submissively from anyone. This is called false pride. Mayaya paritta jnanam. We think we know, but our intelligence is simply stolen by illusion. Every parent has the experience that sometimes the child is doing everything all wrong, but they think they know better than their parents. So what can the parents do? It's very frustrating. So similarly, Krishna, he has given us all good instructions through Guru, through Sadhu, through Shastra. But the so-called academic and educated men and women, they think they know better. They think they can come up with a higher understanding. And therefore, so many speculations, so many theories, so many hypotheses, so many books, so many departments of education. And the more they increase, the more their pride increases, and the more illusion and confusion increases. Just like the simple example that is often given, if you start from a certain point and you want to go to a destination, but you are going in the wrong direction, then the longer you go, the farther you come from that, from your destination. At the very beginning, you're actually at the closest point. And the further you go the opposite direction, the farther you go. So this is education today. At the very beginning, everyone's in ignorance. But they're not so far from God. But through all of their great, great scientific research based on mental speculation, they're going the wrong direction. And they're going farther and farther and farther from the Lord, from the truth, and they're also going farther and farther and farther from the solution to their real problems of life and real happiness. And therefore, if they want to actually understand what is truth, they have to go back to the beginning point, that I don't know anything, that everything I learned is useless. And this is Arjuna's example. He thought he knew everything, but the more he came up with his theories and hypotheses and relative truths, the more he became miserable and confused. But it was only by Krishna's mercy that he realized he was miserable and confused. If you do not realize that you're miserable, confused, and you are miserable and confused, then you're in the saddest condition. And that is why devotees, when they see materialistic people who think they're happy, they understand they are the worst condition. And when they see materialistic people who know they're miserable, they think, oh, there is some hope for them. In Navadvip, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving the absolute truth, sambandha, abhideya, prayojana, and the simple method of achieving the conclusions of all of these tattvas, which is the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan, the simple people, they took to the process very nicely. And who was it that he had the most trouble? It was the highly learned Brahmins who thought they knew everything of Vedas, but actually knew nothing. And they were so proud, they were not willing to listen to anyone. Rather, they would go to spiritual masters to debate with them, to argue with them. And everyone was just arguing and debating to see who had the best idea, who was the most talented in the art of argumentation. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to humble them somehow or other, which he did through so many methods, sometimes through leprosy, sometimes through cholera, sometimes by defeating Keshav Gopal Chapala, Gopal Chakravarti, some Keshav Kashmiri just completely destroyed his ego and put him in a completely blank state of mind. So we all have to be humbled. The whole purpose of material energy is to humble us. And this was shown at the beginning of creation. Brahma was the greatest intellect. Brahma was born directly from Vishnu, therefore his name is Atmabhu. And from his birth, if anyone were to perform his horoscope, they would see that he was destined to live 311 trillion years. Hare Krishna. What kind of person is this? Such a great personality, with the capacity to create planets and species and millions of children. But yet, in this material universe, due to the nature of the external energy, he was completely bewildered. He didn't know who he was, where he was, what he was, how he was supposed to live. And by his own means, it was impossible for him to figure it out. He was in darkness. But then he humbled himself and he realized, I know nothing. And then Krishna spoke these two sacred syllables, Tapa. And Brahma, as a perfect disciple, heard submissively the words of his guru and executed it, applied it to his life, without duplicity, without hypocrisy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs us that when we are watering the seed of bhakti, many weeds will grow along with that seed. And duplicity, hypocrisy, are two such very deadly weeds. Rupa Goswami says we must be very simple and very straightforward in devotional service. We should not have ulterior motives. We should not be practicing devotional service for any other reason except to purify our heart, to please Guru, Krishna, Vaishnavas. That's all. If you have other motivations, that is a sign of duplicity. But Brahma had no duplicity. He was sincere. He honestly, earnestly wanted to know, what is it that I am supposed to do and how can I serve you? So he performed his tapasya in a spirit of bhakti or devotion. And through this process, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his own causeless mercy, revealed to Brahma by Kunta. The ultimate goal of life, the supreme destination of everyone who is living within this material existence. So Srimad Bhagavatam is so wonderfully explaining that at the very beginning of the manufacture of this universe, the purpose and how to achieve the purpose was established before anything else took place. What is the purpose? To see Vaikuntha, to go to Vaikuntha, that transcendental abode beyond the miseries and limitations of material life. And how to achieve it? By humbly approaching the spiritual master, by inquiring submissively, and by carrying out his instruction by performing tapasya or service in a spirit of bhakti. And here, Srila Shukadev Goswami is describing that Lord Brahma saw the beauty of Vaikuntha and the beauty of all the denizens of Vaikuntha. In today's verse, we are reading not about Lord Vishnu, but about Lord Vishnu's devotees. What are their glories? What are their qualities? How attractive are they? Lord Brahma is approaching the Lord first through his seeing his devotees and worshipping his devotees, seeing the glory of his devotees. And what is the glory of the devotees of Vaikuntha? That they are completely surrendered to Lord Narayan, and therefore in their completely surrendered soul state, being part and parcel, their original spiritual form is manifested. And that form is so similar to the Lord himself. The denizens of Vaikuntha, all of the males have the same form of Narayan, and all of the females have the same form of Lakshmi Devi, as we are reading here, the beautiful description. They have bluish complexion, just like the sky, and they have beautiful, beautiful necklaces and golden ornaments, and lotus-like eyes, and their dress is yellowish color. The only difference is the forms of these great associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha, they do not have the Shivas, the form of Lakshmi situated on their chest like Narayan. And the other difference is Lord Narayan, he is the supreme master and controller. And all of these great personalities, although they are endowed with so much beauty and so much strength, they are endowed with all the six opulences. But they are always conscious that they are helplessly depending on the mercy of the Lord, that he is Purusha and they are Prakriti, that he is the enjoyer and they are all simply meant for his enjoyment. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovadadati kaman. That they are eternally dependent on Krishna. And that is why Vaikuntha is a place of no anxieties. Because there is no competition. There is no false ego. Everyone agrees on this principle. That all of our relationships are centered around the pleasure of Krishna. Our life is based around pleasure to Krishna. There is no other purpose. And as soon as anyone thinks in a selfish way about their own self-interests, immediately that creates an atmosphere where there will be competition and envy. And therefore, as soon as that desire enters your heart, you cannot remain in Vaikuntha. This material world is ultimately meant to purge that desire from our heart. by showing us how frustrating the ambitions for selfish desires are. So wonderful that the denizens of Vaikuntha, they have such opulence, but yet they are not proud. In this material world, if a person is a little beautiful, if their eyes have some distant semblance to a lotus petal, they think they're very beautiful. If someone's complexion is, in India everyone thinks light complexion is beautiful, but in Vaikuntha it's not like that. Blue complexion is beautiful, not this white. One of my god brothers was a Brijbasi, and Brijbasis are simple. They just, Radha and Krishna, gopas, gopis, they don't know so much about material things. So some foreign devotees from the Western countries, they came to Vrindavan. They came to his home. He brought one of the brahmacharis to his home. And in India, people think, oh, this white complexion is very nice. Unfortunately, we see in our own congregation, that's the oftentimes amongst parents, that is the first, foremost, and most important consideration for marriage. That they have fair complexion and lots of money. Sometimes those are the two can. But anyways, this devotee brought one of our brahmachari godbrothers to his house, and the mother, she just became fearful. She said, don't let him in the house. I said, why? He said, he has white leprosy. Don't you see how his all the beautiful dark color of his body has just become completely disappeared due to the disease of leprosy? We don't want to look like that. So keep him away. It is contagious. So like this, everything is relative in this material world. Actually, in the Western world, nobody likes light complexion. People spend so much money going to these different, places where you, in the winter, where you sit under these lamps to get tan, they called it, to make your skin dark. In the summer, they put all kinds of lotions on their body and creams and sit out in the sun. They just lay there for hours and hours and hours trying to get their skin burnt so it looks darker, so they can attract the opposite sex. It's a fact. And in the winter, they go to these places and sit under these infrared lights. They're probably getting cancer along with it, just to make their skin dark like an Indian, so they can attract the opposite sex. So the grass is always greener on the other side. That is the same. The whole material world is mad under the bodily conception of life, because we don't know what real beauty is. Real beauty is blue complexion. Something materialists have not figured out yet. Not black, not white, not red, not yellow, blue. It's like sky. And in Vaikuntha, everyone has such beauty, and all their eyes are actually like lotuses. And they also have incredible strength. What is the strength? Two of the denizens of Vaikuntha, however many there were, they came to collect, to save Ajamil, and here are the Yamadutas. The Yamadutas are very muscular, powerful people. Sometimes we see in India people are lifting weights. In Juhu, I don't know if it's still there, but when Prabhupada was giving lectures, sometimes in the background of his tapes you hear
people just lifting weights and just making all noises of straining and struggling to somehow or other pick up this piece of steel. Why do they work so hard like this, perspiring and breaking their backs? Because they want to look strong. They want to be strong. But actually, if you really want to be strong in the material world, you should become a Yamaduta. Because the Yamadutas, they are really strong. They come and collect these weightlifters like a child collects a ant from the ground. They're so powerful with their weapons. But when the Vishnu Dutas came, the Yamadutas understood that they will destroy us within a second. We have no power compared to them. So what are the opulences of the denizens of Vaikuntha? So beautiful, so incredibly strong, so incredibly learned, such unbelievable fame, and their wealth. We are reading, they have the most precious jewels. Any one of their jewels that decorate their body is worth more than the whole treasury of the richest people of this world. They are Chintamani jewels. What is the wealth? But yet, although they are endowed with all these opulences, they are never proud. They are always conscious that it is all the property of Krishna, that I am the property of Krishna. It is all meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Whatever beauty there is of my body, it is only meant to give pleasure to Krishna. It is not meant to attract pleasure for myself. Whatever wealth, incredible wealth I have, and all the denizens of Vaikuntha have unlimited wealth, they think it is not to attract people for my satisfaction. It is all meant simply to give pleasure to Krishna. It is all to be used for the service of Krishna. And whatever strength they have, whatever knowledge they have, whatever fame they have, the denizens of Vaikuntha have opulences, all six opulences, in such incredible degrees. But it is all completely and exclusively meant for the satisfaction of Krishna. And therefore it is Vaikuntha. It is a place with no anxiety. Because to the degree you want to use anything for your own selfish purposes, that creates anxiety. To the degree we are thinking about our own personal selfish interests apart from Krishna's interest, to that degree, potentially, we are envious, competitive, and disharmonious with other living beings. So Lord Brahma, at the very beginning of creation, saw what is spiritual society. How everyone is so harmoniously and lovingly together for Krishna's service. And how every devotee in Vaikuntha, Prabhupada explains, has so much love and respect and regard and honor for every other denizen of Vaikuntha. It's not that everyone is just serving Narayan and completely negligent of the other devotees. Everyone is completely fixed on pleasing Narayan, but they know that honoring, respecting, and pleasing the other devotees is the means by which Narayan will be most satisfied. That is Vaikuntha. In fact, Prabhupada said, Vaikuntha atmosphere, every devotee thinks every other devotee is better than me. Every other devotee is more important than me. Therefore, I should humbly serve every Vaishnava with great respect. That is the Vaikuntha atmosphere. Yesterday, we celebrated the appearance of Sri Ramanujacharya. There's a nice story if you permit me to narrate, in this regard. Because the spiritual master, especially such a great acharya as Ramanujam, is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how we treat Guru is how we treat God, as far as God is concerned. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kutho. So Ramanujacharya appeared in this world to teach us by his example and by his words what is the path of perfection, how to please Krishna. So at one time, Sri Ramanujacharya, while living in Srirangam, decided to take a journey to Sri Shaila. They wanted to go to Tirupati to have the beautiful darshan of Venkateshwar. So he took some of his disciples and they began their journey. On the way they came to one village and Ramanujacharya decided that they would stay in that village overnight and take nice prasad. He had two disciples in that village. One's name was Yagesh and the other was Varad Acharya. Yagesh was a very, very wealthy man and also a very good devotee. He was a rich businessman. And Varad Acharya was a very, very poverty-stricken, poor man. So on the outskirts of the city, Ramanujacharya sent two of his disciple servants. He said, go to Yagyesha's house and tell him I would like to come and stay with him for the night, for the whole day and the night. It was morning at that time. So the two servants went to Yagyesha's house. They saw the wonderful wealth and opulence that he lived in. And they told that Ramanujacharya is planning to come to spend the day at your home with his followers. So he, Yagyesha, became so excited. He immediately just, in great enthusiasm to serve his Gurudev, he was organizing so many beautiful arrangements, getting nice food, arranging nice prasad to be cooked, making decorations, cleaning the area, making everything so pleasing for his guru would be satisfied. But in the meanwhile, as he was just running here and there and giving instructions and performing so many duties for his guru's service, he neglected the two servants that were sent. He didn't even give them water or a sitting place. So they went back and they told Sripad Ramanujacharya that wonderful arrangements are being made for you at Yagesha's house. So Ramanuja inquired, and how did they treat you? I said, they didn't treat us at all. He was too busy arranging for you. So Ramanujacharya became very angry. They are not serving my servants, they are not serving me. However many wonderful arrangements they're making for me, if they're neglecting to give pleasure to my devotees, then I will not go. So then Ramanujacharya and his disciples, they all personally went to Varad Acharya's house. At the time, Varad Acharya was out begging alms. He would go out in the morning and come back at noon every day, just begging house to house, somehow trying to get enough food to survive. Now, he had a wife whose name was Lakshmi, and she was very, very chaste and very devoted. And worst of all, very beautiful. And I will explain why that is worst of all. So when Ramanujacharya and the devotees arrived at the house, Lakshmi Devi offered her obeisances. She was so surprised. Why such a great soul is coming to our house? And she welcomed them with so much devotion, and she welcomed every devotee with so much devotion. And after greeting them, just according to proper etiquette of bhakti, she said, "Please go to the river and take your bath. And after you take your bath, I will have nice prasad for you." So they all went to the river, and she went into the kitchen. And they were so poor, there was not even one single grain of rice in their whole house. So she was thinking, what to do? Guru Maharaj has come with his devotees. We must serve them all wonderfully. So she began to think. And she remembered there was one very, very wealthy merchant who was a sinful rascal. And he was always attracted to the beauty of Lakshmi. And he was always wanting to enjoy her. And he used to send female messengers offering her jewels, offering her precious metals, offering her beautiful, beautiful silk saris and all sorts of other cloth, offering her huge amounts of money if she would just come and allow him to enjoy her beauty. And she would never speak with him, she would never look at him, she had absolutely nothing to do with him, because she was satisfied with her husband. Her husband had nothing, but he was honest, he was sincere devotee. And she understood that this is real wealth, to have the association of a devotee. So on this day she was thinking that my husband, I know how much he's dedicated to his Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya. And if we cannot serve him nicely, then what is the use of morality and what is the use of life? So in her urgent, desperate state of mind, she went out the back door so no one saw her. And she went to that merchant and she said, "Tonight I will fulfill whatever desires you have, but my Guru Maharaj has come. So please give me everything necessary today to serve him and his disciples." So he was thinking, this is very good. I almost gave up hope. So he sent wonderful, wonderful foodstuffs and wonderful, wonderful garlands and everything. And she began to cook and make everything nice. And when Ramanujacharya and his devotees came from taking their bath, they were wonderfully surprised to see this poor, poor family. The husband was still out begging, and yet there was luxurious, opulent prasad. And wonderful garlands and wonderful everything. And they just, Ramanujacharya and all the devotees just enjoyed this feast to their full satisfaction. And afterward, after they were taking prasad and enjoying so much the great love that she was offering, then Varadacharya came with his little begging bag, some broken grains, whatever else beggars get, and he saw Ramanujacharya and all the devotees eating sumptuous feast in his house. And he asked Lakshmi, "How is this possible? When I left, there was not one grain of rice." She put her head down in great shame, and she said, "In the emergency of the situation, this is what I have done. I have promised to go to this sinful man tonight if you would help me to serve my Guru Maharaj. Please forgive me. And Varadacharya began to dance in ecstasy when he heard this. And he said, I am so fortunate to have a wife like you, who is a very embodiment of the highest and purest religious principles, who is the very embodiment of the highest principles of chastity. Because Lord Narayan is the only Purusha, he is the only husband, he is the only master, and to satisfy him is the only goal of life. And the only way we can satisfy him is by satisfying his representative, our Guru Maharaj. So you have done very good. So then after Ramanuja took, he gave the prasad, his remnants, to Varadacharya and Lakshmi Devi. And they took very nicely. And then they explained to him how they got such nice prasad, what Lakshmi did. And Ramanujacharya very patiently and attentively heard the whole story. And then he took some maha prasad from his own plate and what was left by even Lakshmi and Varadacharya, the maha prasad. And he said, when you go to this man's house tonight, you give him this feast of prasad. So Varadacharya and Lakshmi Devi went to the merchant's house. And she went in, and he was looking upon her beauty with intense lust. And she said, please, I have brought you my Guru Maharaj's Mahaprasad. So he sat down, and he began to eat the prasad. And he was eating and eating and eating. And by the time he finished his plate of prasad, he was purified. And he started looking at Lakshmi with the respect and reverence of a child looking at his mother. And he said, dear Mataji, please forgive my offenses. Please forgive my sinful tendencies. Please take me to your guru and let me surrender to him. So she was very happy. And Varadacharya and Lakshmi and this sinful man, they all went back to Varadacharya's house. And all three of them paid their dandavats to Sripad Ramanujacharya. And this man, he was crying, he was weeping, I am so sinful. I am thinking like this about your disciples for so long, but now I only want to surrender my life to you. Please free me of my bad habits. And on that day, Ramanujacharya gave this man initiation, diksha. He had such a changed heart. And from then on, he was completely self-controlled and pure and humble and gentle. And then he offered, because actually it was Lakshmi and Varadacharya that made him a devotee. And he saw how they were actually suffering from being so poor. So right in the presence of Ramanujacharya, he said, I will give huge sums of money to you. I will give you great wealth so you don't have to suffer poverty. You can use it all in Krishna's service. And Varadacharya didn't want it. Ramanujacharya was perfectly in agreement that they're devotees. Why should they be in such poverty? Why should they be suffering, begging? You can take the money, live comfortably. Sudama Vipra did like that, no problem. But Varadacharya said to Ramanuja, he said, please, he said, I am content living a simple life, serving your devotees and chanting the holy names. If I have this wealth, I may become attached. If I have this wealth, then I may become envious of someone who has more wealth. Therefore, please, let me live with nothing. This is my prayer. So that myself and my wife could live a simple and hard life physically, but always be remembering you and serving you without the complications of all of these material things. So Ramanujacharya became very happy. He said, yes, you be as you are. So he remained poverty-stricken, although he possessed the greatest opulence, the greatest wealth. And what is that? The servant. Prabhupada tells Dhruva Maharaj was offered by Kuvera any wealth of the demigods. He said, I do not want anything but the blessing that I can always remain the servant of the servant of the servant. Kolavecha Sridhar was as poor as Varadacharya, perhaps even more poor. And when he was offered all the opulences of the heavens, all the mystic cities of the yogis, he did not want. He only wanted to be the servant of the servant of the servant. So we find, what is real wealth? Of course, there are other stories, like Sudama Vipra. He was a poor man. He accepted all the wealth to please his wife. And he still remained the servant of the servant of the servant. And in Vaikuntha, there is no poverty in Vaikuntha. There are no beggars in Vaikuntha. Everyone is endowed with unlimited quantities of wealth. You see, in this material world, there's limited resources, so there's limited wealth. But in the spiritual world, everything is ananta, everything is unlimited. There is no end. It is inconceivable to the material mind. Everyone could have as much as they want of everything. But as soon as they want to enjoy any of it for themselves, they get kicked out. Hare Krishna. But there's unlimited resources for everyone. That is Vaikuntha. And everyone simply utilizes it all for Krishna. This is the spiritual world. And this is what Lord Brahma has seen, and this is what Lord Brahma has revealed to the world through disciplic succession. The path of pure bhakti, the original constitutional position of every living entity. And the ultimate destination of life is simply to be situated in that original spiritual nature of loving service to the Lord. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu implemented a number of methods in order to humble some of the scientists and scholars, and at the same time, humility being the prerequisite to bhakti. Mm-hmm. Humility, to be humble, is a prerequisite to bhakti. And but in our life, we come across various segments of people. So how do you blend humility by word, action, and deed? In the sense that you in a state of being with devotees, it's one thing, but you may be with unknown devotees, non-devotees. So how do you be the same in every situation, to be humble or to show humility?
Your consciousness should remain the same, but how you speak and how you act is according to how you could best serve. Real humility doesn't mean simply bowing down to everyone. Of course, that is very nice. The six Goswamis, they did like that. But real humility is a state of your consciousness.
that you are not the doer of your activities, that nothing belongs to you. Your body, your mind, your intelligence, it is all the property of Krishna. It is all coming by the grace of Krishna. It will all be taken away in due course of time by the grace of Krishna. So to utilize whatever Krishna has in Krishna's service according to Krishna's desire, that is actual humility. In the case of Arjuna, he was not bowing his head down before Duryodhana. He was shooting arrows at him. And we find in the Mahabharata, when great warriors would meet on the battlefield, sometimes they would insult each other terribly. I will send you, are a pig, I will send you to the abode of Yamaraj. Huh? Because that's the way you have to talk when you're fighting. Yes? So you're asking, how is this humility? He's insulting and killing. But it was humility. Why? Because he was simply executing the order of Krishna. Knowing that Krishna is the source of all my strength, Krishna is the source of all my intelligence, and I have no right to utilize these things according to my own whims, but I must utilize all of these gifts according to Krishna's desire. For Arjuna to leave the battlefield and sit on the bank of a river to meditate would have been false pride. For him to fight and to kill was humility. Because real humility is a state of consciousness. It means making oneself completely subservient to the will of the Lord. So in our daily activities, we should remain pure. We should chant 16 rounds. We should follow the four regulative principles. We should come and associate with devotees. And in our life, within our occupation, sometimes we may be with so many other types of people. And we may have to do things, but we should maintain a high standard of morality and ethics and perform our duties, give the fruits of our action to Krishna, and offer our actions as a service to Krishna. That is humility.
At any given moment, how do you know that what you're doing is the will of the Lord? It's all the time, is it possible to identify that?
The best way is to ask. If you do not know, you ask.
Ask yourself, ask Guru.
You ask someone who knows. You ask Guru, you ask senior Vaishnavas. Not necessarily now. But you inquire from people who are experienced and who actually understand the science of Krishna consciousness nicely. And they will help to give you guidance. Then you know. If you're following that guidance from the proper source, then you know. Otherwise, you do not know. We should never be in a state where we do not know. We have the association of devotees to clarify our confusions and doubts. The only real question is, do you want to know? Or do you want to do what you want to do? Then we have to understand that we are responsible. Any other questions?
In the lecture, Maharaj, you mentioned about being duplicitous and being hypocrite. Is there a difference between duplicitous and hypocrisy?
Between what?
Being duplicitous and being an hypocrite.
Is there a difference? They are different aspects of the same deviation. Being duplicitous means to say one thing, but to mean another thing because you have an ulterior motive. Being hypocritical is to preach one thing, to advocate one thing, and to do something completely different because you have ulterior motives. So they are both various varieties of trying to exploit. If you are in a mood of service, if you are in a mood of humility, there will be no duplicity or hypocrisy. You will be honest, you will be straightforward. And what you speak, you will do. What Krishna speaks, you will do.
Maharaj, often when we speak of these mukti, different muktis, and the sarshti mukti of equal opulence, or equal strength as that of Vishnu, question is asked whether they have same power as Vishnu. Generally ones, I answer.
The denizens of Vaikuntha?
Yeah, in Vaikuntha.
They do not have the same power of Vishnu. They have qualitatively the same power, but quantitatively it is only minute proportion. Because the Lord's power is unlimited. Of course, in the Vaikuntha planets, the spirit soul is manifesting its true eternal spiritual potential. In this material world, the soul is so much covered by Rajaguna and Tamaguna that its spiritual potential is practically nothing. In Satya Yuga, the spiritual potential is much more revealed and expressed simply because there's less covering of Rajaguna and Tamaguna in Satya Yuga. Therefore, people could live 100,000 years. And practically everyone has all the eight mystic cities. Because the soul is just less covered. In Kali Yuga, if a person lives to 100 years old, everyone is offering their obeisances. How great. That is, my guru is 110 years old. My grandfather lived to 105 years old. This is considered such a great thing to live old. The tree in my backyard is 2,000 years old, so who cares about all these other things? It is a fact. Longevity of life is not such a great thing. But in Vaikuntha, the soul is in its pure, completely uncontaminated state. Therefore, by material standards, it has incredible, inconceivable beauty and power and wealth and strength and fame. All opulences. But still, they are always qualitatively one in their perfect state, but quantitatively infinitesimal and utterly dependent on Krishna. That is our eternal constitutional position, even in the perfect state of consciousness. Does that answer your question?
And also that by the mercy of the Lord, he can be empowered to do much more than even his ability, like it said that wherever Krishna descends in all the universes, Arjuna also comes with him. So, by the mercy of Krishna, Arjuna can expand himself into as many Krishna wants.
Yes, the soul that surrendered to Krishna in its pure spiritual consciousness is an instrument. Krishna can do anything, even through his living entity.
we find Arjuna can expand himself by Krishna's grace. Arjuna can do anything by Krishna's grace. But also Arjuna becomes completely helpless and useless with Krishna's grace. When Krishna withdrew his power, Arjuna's Gandiva bow did not function. His mighty strong arms as a kshatriya became incapable. He was easily defeated by just a band of ordinary highway robbers. Not even kshatriyas. How is that? Krishna showed. Arjuna was as unlimited as Krishna in the sense of Shaktivesh. He was empowered by Krishna. But he was always depending on Krishna. So similarly, if we surrender to Krishna, we can do incredible, wonderful things. But if we become proud, Krishna can take it all away because it is all His. It is never ours. Your ability to preach, your ability to speak, your ability to cook, your ability to sing, your ability to do anything is all coming from Krishna's grace. If you become proud of these things and think you are the doer, you are the benefactor, you are the savior, then if Krishna is merciful, He will take it all away to give you the realization that you are nothing but the completely helpless, dependent servant of the Lord. That is your eternal constitutional position. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Radhe Śyāma, Puna Pandit.
Maharaj, just like a mother sometimes appreciates a child for writing some alphabets, the child is scribbling something, the mother is very appreciative. Similarly, sometimes we see very new devotees, they render some small services, although we know that according to the expected standards, it is all horrible, they haven't done a good job, but still we appreciate them for their service. Is it duplicitous?
It is mercifulness. We should appreciate and encourage any devotee for any attempt they make to advance in Krishna consciousness, to serve Lord Krishna. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki. Thank you very much.